What's up, guys? Welcome to the Behind the Deal podcast, where we explore growth through acquisition. Whether you're a private equity fund manager looking to expand your portfolio or a business owner aiming to scale and build lasting value through acquisition, each of our episodes will break down the strategies, stories, the lessons that make acquisition one of the most powerful paths to growth. I hope you enjoy. On today's episode of Behind the Deal, I am joined by Nathan Chandraskaran, the co-founder and partner at Columbia River Partners. We had a pretty insightful conversation around their fund strategy, around the independent sponsor model, around the maybe carve out and, you know, less, I should say, not less appealing, but, you know, maybe slightly distressed business model strategy that they deployed, their operational kind of finesse and how they put deals together, and, you know, ultimately why certain capital partners might be a better better opportunity than other capital partners. And these are just lessons that he's learned, you know, having done this 15 times and kind of gone out on his own. And you know, it's just a great conversation. Nathan's an awesome guy. Their fund is getting, you know, putting themselves on the map and getting to be amazing at what they do. So I hope you guys enjoy Behind the Deal. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Behind the Deal podcast. My name is Joe Zanka, your host, co-founder and managing partner of DealGen Partners. And today I'm joined by my guest, Nathan Chandraskaran, co-founder partner at Columbia River Partners. Nathan, what's going on? How you doing?
Hey, man. Good morning. Good afternoon. Good evening. Thanks for hosting.
Yeah, man, I'm excited to talk. You know, we've known you guys and been, you know, sharing some deals back and forth for probably a little over a year now, maybe a little longer. I know my partner Brian and you know, Steven have developed a pretty good relationship, but I'm glad I get to, you know, kind of meet you and open up this discussion here a little bit more.
Great. I'm excited to be here.
So before we get into the questions and everything like that, I'd welcome you to kind of tell us a little bit about Columbia River, what you guys do, what your strategy is, and then we'll take it from there.
Yeah, so real quick on Columbia River Partners, we're an independent sponsor. We've been around about 5.5 years. We've done about 15 transactions across 7 platforms. My partner and I started this back in late 2019, early 2020. My background prior to Columbia River Partners was I used to be at a larger middle market fund for about 12 years called TCP Group. And then before that, I was a consultant and an M&A banker. My partner, Puneet, he was really been on the venture side, investing in venture and startups and working at his own family office. And then we got together in 2020, or late 2019, right before COVID. Did our first deal, went sideways pretty fast, put a lot of time on it. And then since then, we've been able to, you know, narrow our focus, and we focus on what we call the picks and shovels of tech. We're generally value buyers. You know, we're looking for assets that are underperforming to some degree, and our goal is to, you know, buy them at good value, put in good teams, support those teams, and create really good companies. I'm not saying it always works, but that's our goal.
Awesome, man. Awesome. So you mentioned that first deal, right? And I think that's that leap of faith into this world. You know, you have a background that kind of supports it, but there's a difference between, you know, operating within, you know, maybe a more established organization and then taking those talents and starting your own thing. So talk to me about that first deal. You know, where did it come from and how did it kind of come together?
Yeah, look, I was working for a larger fund, but I was commuting from Seattle to New York. And pre-COVID, they really wanted to run back in New York. So, you know, was living in Seattle, wasn't going to move. Not a lot of private equity opportunities for a senior person in Seattle. So by default, I had to go do something on my own, really, if I was going to stay in private equity. I was able to find a deal that was sort of a carve out. You know, Puneet, my partner, we locked it up, and then we spent, you know, 45 days fundraising, right, for a small $10 million equity check. And, you know, we called lots of names and eventually got the deal done. And that put us on the map, right? It was a business that provides hardware, software components for, at the time, drones to fly more safely. That's the deal that we did. So that's his life that put Puneet and I together, put us on the map, and got us our start back in 2020. Unfortunately, we bought it right before COVID. So we had supply chain, everything you could think of that went wrong with that business. But luckily, we had a really good team who supported them. And today, that business is actually doing really, really, really well.
Awesome, man. That's a great story, honestly. And So when you identified this opportunity, did you have capital partners in mind that you could think would fund it? Or was it kind of one of those things where, you know, chicken before the egg, hey, let's go. We got an opportunity on the hands. We see a lot of value here. Let's get it under LOI. And then, you know, we're pretty confident in our network, you know, but maybe we haven't established committed partners yet, but we think we can get this done. How did you approach that?
Great question. So honestly, I didn't know what I was doing at the time, because you think you've got all these relationships for capital providers. Honestly, you just don't know who's actually going to show up when you ask them for money. It's just, there are a bunch of names I thought that were going to provide capital. They didn't. There are a bunch of names I never heard of that provided capital. So we got the deal locked up, and then we just really ran around and talked to probably over 100 folks. And some folks I thought would write a check did not. And some folks I'd never heard of wrote a check. It's hit or miss. Sometimes you catch them at the wrong time. Their deal flow is full. They're busy in their own lives. It's not easy. So when I locked up the deal, I did not have the capital identified yet. But I was, and I wouldn't say I was fairly confident. I was like, you know, I think the mindset was, I think I can get this done. But I won't lie, it's very stressful. Right? And even every time we lock up a deal a day, I'm like stressed, like, oh, can I get the deal? And now I'm like, I'm much more confident that I can get it done now that we've done it 15 times, right? Running around trading capital.
Right.
And it's easier, right? Because I've got a Rolodex of people that I know who to call. I can be more market on economic terms, right? We probably gave a little bit more discount on those economic terms in that first deal, which is fine. But no, it wasn't like, I didn't have like a capital set in place yet. I was building it. Luckily I got it done, but it wasn't easy. I learned to hear a lot of no's for lots of random reasons. That's okay.
Well, you know what I mean? It's a silver lining in everything, right? And you know, that those challenges and hearing those no's, you know, eventually they give you those confidence, you know, to keep going, and the confidence that you can get it done. You know, now that you've been able to do it 15 times, you know, I feel like you need to go through all of that stuff, you know, whether you're starting a business from scratch, whether you're buying a company and kind of going out on your own in the way that you did, you know, you just have to keep going in order to actually start to understand, all right, what doesn't work most importantly. And then, you know, where can I go next time when I lock up this deal, you know, who can I rely on? How can I keep developing those relationships and keep making these things go? So you came from a fund, as you mentioned. You guys, you know, obviously started off with the independent sponsor model. You've done this 15 times now with the independent sponsor model. Talk to me about, you know, why maybe you've stuck with that strategy versus going out and raising a traditional fund. And what advantages does the independent sponsor bring versus, you know, maybe having that capital pool already sitting there?
Look, there's no right answer, and there's pros and cons to both. Sort of why we have stayed in this model is, number one is, you know, to go raise a fund, you need to have an exit, which we don't have. And often a lot of the placement agents, they all reach out to us, say, hey, we would love to talk to you about raising a fund. Yeah, the first two questions are, do you have an exit, and do you have an anchor LP? I think we'll have an exit pretty soon. We may have a couple of guys that could be an anchor LP. My view has been, let's accomplish those goals first, and then we can decide whether to raise a fund or not. Luckily, today, 3 years ago, I would have said, hey, we've got to raise a fund, because it's how you attract a good team. It's how you get better deals. It's how do you, all there's lots of reasons. Some of those reasons, I can check the box. You know what? I don't know if I, you know, we're getting plenty of good deal flow today, because people are becoming more confident in us that we can raise the capital on a deal-by-deal basis. So it's a good question that we sort of punted that we're going to revisit at the end of 2025, probably early 2026. Hey, do we need to raise a fund? Do we want to raise a fund? And fundraising in itself is almost a full-time job. Is a full-time job.
Yeah.
And that's something that we have to decide, do we want to take that off?
Yeah, it brings, you know, I think from the naked eye who doesn't know much about this world, you know, they would say, all right, it makes sense to just have the money sitting there, right? But there's a lot that goes into that, you know, having committed LPs who have their money with you, you know, it just brings on, I mean, I'm sure you guys have also enjoyed, you know, some of the flexibility that, you know, allows you to look at deals and be like, hey, is this something we want to take on without having the, you know, kind of weight on your shoulders of like, hey, people have given us their money. Like, we need to go out and spend it, you know, versus maybe just going deal by deal and being like, no, this is the right opportunity to spend it. I'm not saying that there's people out there who, you know, have funds and are just buying anything just to spend the money. But at the same time, it does add that added pressure. And, you know, you now are, I guess, answering to people, you know, full time versus, you know, just on maybe a deal by deal basis. So they're just those hidden challenges that I feel like a lot of people might not think about prior to, you know, starting in this space and being like, well, the first thing we got to do is go raise a fund.
Yeah, 100%. The other two benefits of not raising a fund, and don't worry, raising a fund is awesome. Lots of great things. You can create value at the general partnership level. You can hire more talent. You can scale faster. You don't have to run around trying to find capital.
Right.
There's more pros to raising a fund. The two pros for not raising a fund are, one is your deals are not cross-collateralized. So each deal can stand on its own. So, right, you can write. And the second one, to your point, I'm seeing it. There's a lot of pressure to put money to work. I don't have that pressure. Or right or wrong, whether good or bad, right? We've got plenty of good portfolio companies that did enough fee income to support us. We should have some good outcomes. Yeah, maybe I'll never buy a sports team. That's fine. I don't have this pressure to put money to work, which is interesting. When you tell people that I don't need to do another deal, more deals come in. It's like the weirdest dynamic, right? When you tell people that, hey, you don't need another deal, well, take a look at this deal and how about this deal? And so it's been interesting, that dynamic that I feel fortunate to be in that position.
Absolutely. It's a lot of work and grind to get to that position. Speaking of that position, right? So you mentioned how on that first deal, you know, you had to run around and, you know, kind of really ask everybody, you know, anybody who would be out there willing to write a check, you know, would probably be on the list of people that you'd take capital from. Now that you've done this, you know, 15 times, when you look at deals now, how do you vet capital partners, right? How do you, you know, I'm sure you've learned a lot over the years as to what makes a good capital partner versus just someone who can write a check. So how do you look at that dynamic?
So I'll give you two stories. So we have been left at the altar where a traditional private equity firm, who we locked in, hand in hand, and go do a deal. It's a platform that we had found, the CEO we had found, a board member that we had found, put together the thesis over a couple of months. And last minute, they decided, hey, we don't need the independent sponsor. Traditional fund, very large fund, who I did have a good relationship with somebody there. And independent sponsor is not a core channel for them. It's just the deal's important to them, right? And so ultimately, these guys said last minute, hey, we're kicking you guys out. We didn't really have a leg to stand on. Like, you could only, like, at that point, we were still pretty young. This is 2021. And so one of the things we learned is, like, look, if you're going to do a deal where the capital comes from a traditional private equity firm that does deals themselves, it's a super, super high bar. And by that means, they have to be invested in the independent sponsor channel. They're showing up to McGraw Woods. It's on their website that they're supporting independent sponsors. Very few PE firms will say that on their website. Like, sure. You know, there are a couple that do, but like it has to be a really, really high bar. Because there's enough capital elsewhere now that if you have to go to a PE firm for it, like, come on, guys. Then you haven't done the homework and done your job in sourcing a capital. So that's really like the first thing is the capital firm, do they have a history of supporting independent sponsors, right? And if they're doing direct deals themselves, you know, just be very wary. You know, we've turned down better economics because we got concerned that the PE firm loves this deal, give us outsized return or outsized market above market economics. And we're like, you know what, it's too good to be true. Let's go back to the well that we know. Does that make sense?
It does make a lot of sense. And, you know, I, being a deal sourcer, right? And, you know, we work with a lot of different private equity funds to find them opportunities. It's funny because the more you talk to them, it's not on their website a lot of the time that they would back a sponsor, but a lot of them actually do. And I didn't realize that going into this world, but it's an interesting point that you bring up that, you know, money is available. There is dry powder on the sidelines. People want to get involved in certain things. You know, the family office environment. I mean, that's a whole different story that we could probably do a whole show on. But at the same time, you're right in that, you know, it takes some caution, right? Because they're going to look at the deal, and they're going to, you know, probably if they like it and they see a lot of opportunity in it, you know, and they maybe already own portfolio companies in that space themselves, you know, you have to have that in the back of your mind. They're like, this isn't just a check, you know, this could be a partner who, you know, wants to take control. This could be a partner who is going to tell us how to run the company more so than, you know, we're going to be able to deploy the strategies that, you know, we see fit. And those two things, you know, might not be present the day that they're writing the check or that while they're underwriting it, but they could come back to bite you, you know, even after you form the partnership.
And look, and I don't mind if the PE firm says, hey, we're going to take the lead, or we're going to do the diligence, we're going to make the key decisions. Just tell me up front that's what you want to do, and let's make sure the economics are fair. But to cut us out last second or reduce our economics by 95%, which is what these guys did last second, it's not, you know, it doesn't leave a good taste in our mouth. And, you know, you want to find the right, you know, there's enough other capital in there today in the world that you should be able to find other capital.
Absolutely. Where did you get, you know, kind of the operational confidence to, you know, maybe go more of the carve out divestiture type of strategy, right? Where you're buying, you know, maybe a distressed situation, right? Yeah. And obviously there's strategy in that because typically you can get them for a better price. So the bar is a little bit lower than, you know, paying 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 turns of, you know, ARR or EBITDA. But you know, you have to have a lot of confidence that, you know, you're going to be able to turn that situation around. So how did you start with that strategy, and you know, where did that originate?
So, great question. So my prior fund, it was typically founder led, you know, we were buying from founders, you know, relatively healthy companies, buying majority control, giving liquidity, which we'll do some of those too, because we're more focused on our industry focus. It was really our first deal. Our first deal was a carve out of a larger company in bankruptcy. It wasn't my ideal first target, but it's the deal that we got under LOI at the time. And we quickly worked through setting up, you know, IT, ERP, finance, HR, payroll, and we've done three more since then, basically, including a couple of complex ones. There's a lot of trial by error and learning on the job, to be honest with you.
Sure.
But today we've got sort of a system, right? We've got the right third party provider stuff, but we've got our own checklist, what we think are things to address quickly. Every time we do a carve out, we learn more, like we continue to learn more. But again, I go back to our real premise is focusing on sort of the picks and sells of tech. Sometimes they're carve out, sometimes they're just founder owned. It's got to fit that sort of industry thesis that we're focused on. But we feel like we've got the right tools to support carve-outs. Not saying we're always perfect. We're still learning. But sure. I feel like we've got a good bench today.
Got it. That's awesome. And now how big of a role do roll-ups or, you know, doing bolt-on acquisitions play in the strategy? Because, I mean, I'm sure once you get into some of these, you know, not fairly distressed or, you know, slightly distressed situations, the core focus is, you know, the operations for a while. Have you guys, you know, gotten with some of these 15 portfolio companies that you own a chance to, you know, start doing bolt-ons and everything like that? Is that a big piece of the strategy?
It's a good question. So I'd say 4 of the 7 have meaningful add-on acquisition strategy for sure of the 4. Mm-hmm. 2 are heavily growth oriented on their own, and 1 is, you know, kind of hybrid, right? And it's case by case. It just depends on the business, the platform. You know, Cheney Fiber, which is our fiber optic business we bought, there's so much organic growth potential in that business because we are a manufacturer of fiber optic cables. And given what's going on in the marketplace, there's so much demand, like we may be acquiring other facilities to increase our production volume, right? So it's really just, you know, super adjacent to the business, but I wouldn't call it an add-on strategy, right? Whereas Plastic Computer Specialists, we're literally bolting on or adding on smaller MSPs around the country that focus on the same end markets as custom. So it sort of depends on each portco. We're not heavily focused on a lot of the buy and build in sort of residential or commercial services, which, you know, it's a great thesis as well. That's not sort of what we're doing. It's So can be important, but you know, but it's case by case.
Got it. Yeah. Cause there are other, you know, independent sponsors, funds out there that maybe that's all they do, right? They look to roll up and, you know, condense a specific, you know, they might go after the printing industry in New England and they're just like, we're going to buy as many of these as we can and kind of create that, you know, EBITDA arbitrage. But that's just a whole different strategy, you know, and with what you guys are doing, it's, you know, case by case, operational, intensive, focused. And yeah, so that makes a lot of sense. So there's all these different parts of going that goes into what you do that we've kind of talked about on this show already. There's the fundraising, there's the, you know, deal sourcing, the actual acquisitions, you know, putting them together, doing the underwriting. And then there's the operational part where, you know, once you have the company, how are we going to improve this thing? And now we have 15 companies. How are we going to, you know, make sure that all of them are ticking? So I guess my question for you is, you know, what part of this business is, do you see most challenging? And, you know, what keeps you up at night as you guys continue to evolve and grow?
So a couple of things. So portfolio operations, we're still continuing to figure out how to get better at it, supporting our portco. Like one thing that we're learning is we were not very good at is ensuring we've got the right CEOs at the helm of these businesses. And then once we get a CEO who we think is capable, you know, making sure we give him the resources and support to be successful. You know, often what we do is we hire a CEO and like, great, now we hire a CEO, we're on. We're like, look, that guy or gal will still need some support. Okay, let's. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that we did, because being a CEO, I'm learning is a lonely job. So one of the first things that we did this year, we had our CEO summit in April at Seattle. We brought all our CEOs together here for 2 days. We brought some executives from Amazon, from investment bankers, AI startups to talk about what's going on in their worlds. And probably the two most valuable things was the CEOs got to hang out with each other, right? Mm-hmm. And meet some of our LPs, meet some of our providers. But then we gave them each sort of one-on-one time. Here's a two-hour block. Go grab another CEO and spend a half hour together. And talk about whatever you want. It's just the two of you. Right? And
that's great.
They also know it's super valuable. We're now hosting a similar version of that for our CFOs out in Austin in about a month. And similar, we'll bring somebody from NetSuite, we'll bring somebody from Amazon Finance, we're gonna bring one of our accounting partners. And you know, again, but one of the sessions will be a one-on-one session where the CFOs can grab each other and go talk about whatever they want to talk about. So the goal is to let these CEOs and CFOs, the rest of the team know their broader resources. And that's something we're spending a lot of time on is how can we give our executive teams more resources to help them be successful in their role as being stewards of our businesses.
Yeah, I love that. I love that answer. And honestly, like you said, one resource that people don't think about, you know, because it's not necessarily capital or, you know, employees is just relationships to other people who are trying to build a business. You know, I think I've found, you know, as someone who's started a couple of businesses that like, it's incredible. It can be incredibly lonely. There's not a lot of people like in, you know, your family or that you're friends with, you know, that you grew up with maybe or went to college with who are on that same journey that would understand what it's like. You know, it's just like anything, like there's, you know, new mom groups, right? And like my wife, if she has a young baby, like she can go talk to them about what it's like to be a mother. I know what it's like to be a dad and I know my role, but like having those conversations with people who are doing the same thing as you, you know, and are facing the same challenges, like you, it starts to open your mind up like, all right, I'm not going through this alone. Everybody's kind of facing a lot of the same challenges. And now I have a network of friends, even peers who, you know, if I have questions about certain things or, you know, if I'm facing a certain challenge that maybe someone else has already overcome, I can go back to them and be like, hey, what do I do in this situation? Right? Because there's not a lot of people I know out there that I can talk to about it. Most of our business to business relationships, you know, at DealGen, it's, you know, someone's either a client or they're a partner. You know, most of our conversations are about what we're doing for them or, you know, how the partners are helping us. It's not really ever about like, hey, this is some of the stuff that I'm seeing in my own business or my own life right now. Like, how do I navigate that? And business, when you're running a company, there's no real like fine line between work and life balance. You know, it all kind of colludes together. So you just, you know, you have all these hidden challenges that you probably don't even talk to many people about. So I love that approach. I really do.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah. Like the Vistage type of thing, you know, but you can do it within your own little portfolio and organizations.
Correct.
For sure, man. Well, look, I really appreciate your time here, Nathan. This has been great. I appreciate you coming on here. I appreciate, you know, what you guys do and, you know, you guys, Steven on your team has been a great resource to us just as someone who, you know, we'll share deals with, but at the same time, you know, he's been very open to sharing relationships that you guys have with us. So it's awesome. I'm glad we could do this together. I'm glad we could promote each other's companies. You know, my audience, you know, with our LinkedIn network is kind of full of intermediaries, our newsletters full of, you know, different intermediaries, deal sources and everything like that. If people want to, you know, maybe send you an opportunity or, you know, talk to you about maybe being, you know, a potential capital partner one day, where can they find you?
Go to ColumbiaRiverPartners.com or just Nathan@ColumbiaRiverPartners.com and just write an email. Happy to connect.
Beautiful, man. Well, look, I appreciate it. Have an awesome, you know, rest of the Monday here. And I'm looking forward to, you know, continuing to work with you guys.
Awesome. Thanks, Joe. Enjoy your Monday. Appreciate you having me on.
Thanks, man.